Hello. Today we're taking an in-depth look at how a host of startups are bringing more people into the worlds of personal finance and investment. These can be complicated and even opaque sectors, especially if you're not fluent in the language of business and finance. But the four entrepreneurs we're meeting today are lowering those barriers to entry and engaging people who wouldn't ordinarily invest their money or follow the stock market. This is The Entrepreneurs with me, Matt Alagaya. First up, let's hear from Max Rafaga, the founder of Finimize. Like many of us, Max wasn't sure what to do with his own savings and found the information out there, in financial newspapers and on TV networks, often bewildering and overly jargonistic. When he spoke to friends, he realized this was a common theme and decided to launch Finimize, which started as a simple daily email explaining financial concepts and covering important business and finance news, all in plain English. Here, he explains the concept further.
So basically, I came up with the idea for Finimize out of a personal encounter or personal frustration that I had. I was in my mid to late 20s. I had started another company, and everybody around me, in particular sort of my parents and everybody, was saying, hey, you know, you're approaching 30. You need to start saving up some money. And so I took that to heart and every month put money aside from my salary onto a savings account. And one day I looked at my phone, opened my bank account, looked at my savings account, and I realized, fantastic, I actually have savings now. That's great news. And then the immediate follow-up question to that was, all right, so what do I do with my savings? And everybody tells you you need to be saving and how you should be saving, but nobody actually tells you, once you have saved some money, what to do. I had heard of all the different things that I could be doing, but when push came to shove, I just didn't really feel confident or comfortable taking that step. So I did what you do. I asked friends, what do you guys do? A lot of them were bankers. And when I asked them, I pretty quickly found out that they actually had the same problem as myself. They could build really complex financial models for their clients, but they couldn't really tell you what to do with their personal finances. And so I thought that was interesting. And so I figured, I'm going to get professional advice. I couldn't afford a financial advisor. And so just went to my retail branch, sat down with a banker, and they, after having asked me a bunch of very generic questions, laid out all the nice brochures onto the table with their logo on it. And at that point, I realized, okay, this is actually not them giving me advice. This is a sales pitch for their product. And so I was pretty frustrated by that experience. And I went back home and I did what you do. I started Googling, is there a platform or a solution out there that could provide me with independent and holistic financial advice? And I couldn't find anything. And that was the genesis of Finimize.
Really interesting. And obviously, you know, Bloomberg has lots and lots of financial news every single day. There are lots and lots of financial news stations where you can get all your news. Was your problem with all of those that they weren't talking in a language that you understood as someone who's not in finance?
Sure, yeah. So I actually had this interesting thing where I had a New Year's resolution. I wanted to run a marathon and I wanted to read one of the large, which I'm not going to name by name, financial publications every day. And I think 3 months into the year, I had failed at reading the newspaper every day because A, there was so much jargon in there, and B, even if I did understand it, I was kind of left with the question, okay, now so what? But on the other hand, I did end up running a marathon. I actually ended up running two in that year. And so that kind of gave you some sort of a barometer for how accessible and how engaging financial news is today. And, you know, I think Finimize is also trying to solve a problem beyond just financial news. Financial news for us is just one part of the overall puzzle. And so the current platforms like Bloomberg and the others that you mentioned didn't really address that problem for those two reasons.
Really interesting. So talk to me a little bit about how you had this idea. You realized there was this gap in the market for someone to kind of talk in an honest way about finance. Just talk either how you kind of built the company. Did it start as a blog, or was it something that, you know, you knew that it was always going to be what it is today?
When I had this genesis moment that I was talking about, I kind of started digging a bit deeper, and I found out that actually, you know, for one, I knew my friends had the same problem, and then the statistics also showed me, you know, 86% of millennials in my sort of age demographic, obviously, save each month, but they keep more than half of those savings in cash. And the reason for that was that there weren't any suitable ways for these people like myself to get financial advice. And so from day one, our mission has been, we want to empower people like myself and like yourself to become their own financial advisors. And so we dare envisage a world where, you know, similar to not needing a travel agent anymore, thanks to the likes of Expedia, we envisage a world where you don't need a financial advisor anymore. And for us, the financial news was a very nice way to sort of onboard people into the world of finance, as I like to describe it. I'm not a finance person myself, so I can say that it feels very daunting and intimidating. And so we felt, you know, if we can just get people to think about finance 3 minutes a day, they'll feel a lot more comfortable with the topic, and then it'll feel a lot less intimidating for them. And so that was kind of for us the stepping stone. But we've always had this larger mission that we want to empower you to be your own financial advisor by giving information and tools to you as the end consumer.
Now talk us through what those tools are at this stage. So the company's been around a little bit more than 2 years. What tools have you developed in that time that can help sort of young millennials to learn about finance? What kind of things are you actually offering?
As you said, so we started off with financial news, and we actually spent the majority of the time so far building that out. The most recent thing that we've built is a platform with user-generated reviews on financial products, including robo-advisors, stock brokerages, crypto exchanges, and we continue to build those out. That's all powered by a community that we've built up through the financial news of roughly 250,000 people now. And so for us, now that we have this community, we want to essentially unleash the intelligence of that community through these user reviews. And so an easy way to think about it is it's kind of like a TripAdvisor for finance. So you go in there and you see these are the different products, and this is what people like about it, this is what they dislike about it. And it gives you a lot of information in a very condensed and digestible way for you to then make an informed decision.
You mentioned earlier that you had, before this, set up a business. Mm-hmm. Talk us through what that business did, and also what lessons, I guess, you've brought from that to Finimize, the new company.
Sure, yeah. Before that, I had something totally different. I was involved in an e-commerce platform that we set up in Zurich in Switzerland. And what we did was it was a multi-category e-commerce shop. You could buy anything from sports goods to fashion to furniture. And we did that for 5 years and grew that to be the largest e-commerce platform after Amazon within Switzerland. So we had 25% of all households were shopping with us, which is kind of crazy if you think about it, and had a higher brand awareness than British Airways. And so we're a pretty big fish in a small but very nice little pond.
What were the lessons that you brought from that company into Finimize?
I think there were a whole long list of lessons. I think the ones that always stick out is, you know, when I started the other company, I was 24. And I think at that point, I very much underestimated what you kind of describe as soft factors. So stuff like culture and like really being very, very pedantic almost about hiring. And you kind of think more about, oh, we just need to, you know, hit our revenue targets and stuff like that. Kind of what you think when you start a business, that's what matters. And I think the older I got, maybe the more mature my thinking started to become. And I think the biggest lesson for me was that culture really is sort of the foundation of the company, and you can't really put a Band-Aid over it a couple of years in. You have to start thinking about it from day one. And so for Finimize, for example, from day one, I've written down, this is our culture manifest, and you can find it on our website, and we were very public about it. And that then kind of sets the tone, like, this is who we want to be, these are the people that we want to hire, etc. So culture and all these soft factors was really important. And then I think the other sort of lesson for us was, if you build up an audience, that gives you quite a lot of flexibility. So at my old company, we had a couple million people who were subscribed to it or signed up. And it was really nice to test out new product. Oh, maybe people are interested in buying this stuff. Well, not this, but maybe then this. And you have that flexibility. And similarly now with Finimize, with this 250,000 audience, we can try out stuff very quickly and get feedback very quickly. Whereas most other companies, when they start, they have to go buy advertising or put an ad up on Google or Facebook to then attract a user to then try out the product. And I think that scale, I think, is something that's been really, really crucial in setting up the business.
And just finally, let's talk about future plans. So what have you got lined up? What do you think the business will look like? Will it look any different in 2-3 years' time?
Our ultimate vision for Finimize is that we want to become the platform that you check before you make any financial decision. So kind of like today, you check TripAdvisor before you make a hotel booking. We want to be that destination that you check before making a financial decision. And to us, it almost seems very bizarre that in this age of information technology, the most information-driven industry out there remains the most opaque one out there, i.e. finance. And so our core belief is that those sort of barriers to entry for the end consumers are unsustainable. We want to be at the forefront of breaking those barriers down and putting the power into the hands of the end consumer and thereby empowering them to be their own financial advisors.
That was Max Rafaga, founder of Finimize. Next up, we hear from Emily Bellet, who spent years working in tech and private equity before she decided to strike out on her own and start Vestpod. Like Finimize, the central goal of Vestpod is educational, and the motivation behind the startup was also similar. Emily realized that, among her female friends, very few were confident talking about and managing their money. She sought to change that with a series of events and her own newsletter aimed at educating women on the basics of finance and investment. Here she is.
I started working in finance 2006, 2007. I worked for French bank. And then I joined Lehman Brothers in 2007, a year before the bankruptcy. So I joined directly in their investment banking team. I was working in private equity, working on big transactions all over Europe, South Africa, Turkey. And I was there at the time of the bankruptcy, actually. So it was quite an experience as a very junior person. But you learn a lot from these things. And I think maybe the idea of Vestpod started back then, seeing a company and the company stock actually dropping, you know, over a week and the company going bankrupt, which was crazy. And after that, I was offered a position in the spin-off entity. It's another private equity fund. And I worked with them for another 6-7 years. And after that, I also launched a first tech business that didn't work, but we raised some seed funding and the business was a recruitment platform for startups. So we were sourcing developers and trying to help startups hire the best tech talent in London. And over the years, I realized that while I was good at earning money, I thought it was actually extremely difficult to make good financial decisions because I never received any financial education. And usually financial habits are inherited from our families and money is not something that, you know, I was discussing at home or with my friends. And I looked for a financial advisor and I realized this was quite a difficult process and I couldn't find someone I could really, you know, relate to or I could work with. And that's how I decided to start Vestpod. So Vestpod started really as a weekly newsletter. I just started writing about what I was learning about personal finance and trying to write it in an interesting, in a fun way, something relatable for my friends. And I started sending that to all my friends. And that's how basically Vestpod from a newsletter started become more of a business. I was spending 100% of my time doing that, basically. I could see myself, for example. So I was a woman working in banking and I realized this was actually really difficult for me. So I realized, what about, you know, my other friends who don't work in finance? So doing my research, I realized that, yeah, level of financial literacy are extremely low. And that has been shown actually by research. And financial literacy for women is lower than for men for some reason. And I feel women, we have this image that money is sort of negative and vulgar, and we don't talk about money. And I feel men would be interested in talking about money maybe through investing. So, you know, investing in the stock market, investing in other asset classes sounds fun, and men would tend to do it more than women. So they will try, maybe they will fail, they will make mistakes, but at least they will learn. And women, we're not so interested about maybe investing, maybe because we are not so confident about financial markets. And I mean, our generation went through also the financial crisis. So, you know, who can you trust and where can you get actually good information was difficult. So also looking at the statistics, you'll see that women have much less in their pensions versus men. We are good savers, but we are not that good at investing money. So I thought, you know, there's really a need actually to target women and to talk specifically to women. And with Vestpod, I think it's a lot of, you know, the marketing and the branding. So trying to be appealing to women and not be another, you know, I mean, the Financial Times is amazing and I read it all the time, but it's not very appealing for women that don't work in finance, for example. I'm very protective of the brand and of my community, because who's building a brand? I mean, I was maybe the first one to build a brand and decide on the design and inviting these people to you know, my workshops and my classes. But actually, the women in my community are really building the brand. My community is very diverse. Women come from different origins. They have different jobs, different professional networks. That's the way I'm shaping Vespod. It's basically not trying to replicate what's been done before, but creating a new movement of women who are interested in finance and want to live life on their own terms, but they don't really know where to start. From the newsletter and being like a small media in finance, I thought, you know, it would be so nice to actually meet my community and get women in the room. So how can I do that? So I started doing a first workshop in March this year, and it sold out, and I had this woman in the room, and that was actually really stressful. Trying to organize an event on finance. I mean, I come from finance, but I come from corporate finance. So I had to educate myself on everything related to personal finances and try to translate it in a way that's jargon-free, that's approachable. So I built this first workshop, I had my slides, and then I had this woman coming. And it was amazing to have this woman in the room. And I think for them, it was super beneficial to be able to ask all the questions they never asked to anyone about personal finance. And I started rolling out these events, so every 2 weeks, and now we had over, you know, 150 women going through the workshops, and it's very positive. So they've been asking, so for, you know, what's next? Can we learn about saving? Can we learn about investing, financial goals, cryptocurrencies? So I'm rolling out this program, and I think the end goal is building an academy for personal finance for women. I've been bootstrapping the business. I've raised funding for my previous business, and you lose flexibility when you raise funding. So for this one, I really want to try to push it as much as I can, and then of course, you know, raise money when I can expand. The business started to make money this year, so I'm starting to monetize mainly through events, and I will look at partnership, but I don't necessarily want to get sponsorship and do partnership with financial institutions. I would much more prefer to work with women's brand and retail brands, because I feel we can have a bigger impact, and also I'm not trying to replicate what banks are doing. So if banks want to do what I do, I feel, you know, they could start doing it tomorrow and they have the budget for that. We're just trying to be different. And since I'm not selling any financial product, I'm really selling the education. I feel it's really important to be independent. I had a busy year. You know, I was involved in the Google Startup Accelerator for Moms, which was amazing. So that was sort of the launch of the Vespod journey. And I'm part of The Family, which is a platform for entrepreneurs. So these guys have been, you know, amazing, really, you know, pushing me and trying to develop new products. And I've been shortlisted in the, you know, Women in Finance Awards this year. So that's an amazing recognition of our work in a room full of bankers. I thought it was quite cool to see Vespod on a massive screen. So this was really good. And next, I'm working on a big project over the next few months. But in January, hopefully, you'll see the full Vespod Academy, and you'll see a full curriculum of classes that people could attend offline and online. So everything from doing your financial goals, saving money, investing money, buying a property, earning more, to, you know, cryptocurrencies, how to work with financial advisors. And I feel this will give people a strong baggage, and they could just take that and, you know, live their own life and go work with advisors, but at least they will be, you know, really confident with their money. And we'll also launch sort of a community-based project, so trying to do online events, you know, all over the UK, so hopefully next year we can start testing these.
That was Emily Belay, the founder of Vespod. Finally, on today's show, let's hear from Ben Stanway and Charlie Mortimer, the co-founders of Moneybox. The old schoolmates set up the company in 2016 with a mission to democratize the world of personal finance and help people plan and save for their futures. The business is best known for its Roundup feature, which allows customers to round up their everyday purchases to the nearest pound and invest the spare change. In its 2 years of existence, Moneybox has helped around 150,000 people start their investing journey. Here are Ben and Charlie explaining the concept and how they came up with it.
Charlie and I were at school together, and we used to sit next to each other in economics, so that's how we got to know each other. And then, well, 10 or 15 years after we left school, we would meet up every so often over a drink and just discuss what we thought were opportunities in personal finance. And I guess one thing that struck us really clearly is just how little help people get when it comes to saving, investing for their future. And the fact that unless you were very, very wealthy, you got no tools, no information that you needed to confidently plan for your financial future. We began to think if there were ways that we could make the tools and information that the wealthy currently get available to everyone through using technology.
You mentioned the wealthy. Where do they get that advice from? What channels are they getting that information from?
Well, the top, let's say, 1% of the country are pretty well served. So you'll get advice on financial planning either from an IFA, an independent financial advisor, or through your private bank. And it may be dressed up a little bit more complicatedly than this, but really what they're advising on is what wrapper you should have, for example, an ISA, a LISA, a pension, what investment products you should have, for example, cash or shares, and a savings plan, which hopefully will get you from where you currently are to where you want to be in the future. And we think that, you know, through using technology broadly defined, that kind of help can be delivered to almost everyone at pretty much zero marginal cost.
And Charlie, we've spoken a little bit there about technology, but just talk us through what the technology for you guys actually does. What do you use technology to do that I guess a bigger bank might not be doing yet?
So I guess for us, we're very much kind of, to Ben's point, starting with trying to help a generation to build out their financial futures. We kind of then use technology to sort of fill in what we need it to do, let's say. So, you know, for us, everything has to be mobile. We know that the generation we're targeting do everything on their phones. They live their life through their phones. So we started off saying, right, we need Moneybox to be truly mobile. So you can only sign up, you can only use the service through the app, unlike kind of a lot of other investment offerings. And that means that kind of everything's built to be optimized in that format. And our next kind of, I guess, challenge was to say, right, we want people to be able to start with small amounts of money. When we did research before we launched, a lot of people said they were reluctant to invest because you need a lot of money. It was very complicated. So we have to make it kind of approachable and easy to do, but also make it easy to start with, say, a pound. So the other piece we spent a lot of time building out was the ability to regularly take kind of very small amounts, so people can start with a pound, and then invest that money through index funds into kind of, you know, thousands of different companies to kind of get that diversification benefit. So actually, we then started to take away the blockers to investing. So actually, it's not that scary. I don't need lots of money. I can start with a pound. And then technology kind of supported that, which, you know, took us over a year to build the kind of platform. But that therefore means that, you know, people can get going quite easily.
Do you think there's a bit of a sort of information asymmetry, I guess, in the marketplace where you're saying, you know, actually you can start with a pound and other people are thinking, I need tens of thousands of pounds if I'm going to start investing?
I think one of the challenges potential customers for us have is that there's no real reason to start today. So I think everyone thinks, yes, it would be good to start saving more, to start investing and to kind of build my financial future, but maybe that's one for tomorrow. So I think one of the other kind of challenges in this area is to get people interested. We're kind of fighting inertia, I think, most of all. And so for us, we have the idea of roundups, which is probably what we're best known for, which I think helps with this. So the idea here is that if you buy a cup of coffee, and it's always a cup of coffee, we use an example, for £2.50, then you can round up to £3 and start investing with that 50 pence. And the interesting thing about the roundups idea is that people see that as quite an easy, fun way to get going, and that helps to break the inertia. But then once they start engaging with the platform, we see that people quite quickly move on to different ways of depositing, be it, you know, a regular £20-30 a week, or when they're paid an extra £100-200, etc. But I think that key of getting people to kind of take that first step is really important, because then once they've done that, they kind of get a bit more engaged, a bit more interested, and they can start to kind of see the progress they're making.
Charlie, you mentioned, interestingly, earlier that you're targeting this generation that's always on their smartphones, and that's kind of the younger generation is who you're targeting with this. Do you think that they really, really need to start thinking about their pensions? Because actually, they may not be property owning in the same way that their parents were. They may not have the great pension schemes that their parents did. Do you think that this generation actually needs to think about this a lot more than any other generation in the past?
I think the idea of having a comfortable retirement's important for everyone, and probably always has been. So I don't think it's necessarily particularly true for this generation. But given I think it's very important for everyone, I think one of the things we're launching in the next few months is a pension. So this is going to be important for us for a few reasons. The the kind of two big trends in this area, I guess, are auto-enrolment. So in the last 4 years, you've had an extra 10 million people paying into occupational pension schemes. So that's now over 40 million people. So there's been this huge rise in the number of people who are paying into pensions, particularly amongst younger people. So that's the kind of first piece. And that's going to be mean that there's an extra 13, 14 billion paid into pensions this year. So you've got this huge increase in the number of people participating and the amount of money being paid into it, especially amongst younger people. So that's the kind of first trend. The second trend is that you have people moving jobs more frequently. So, you know, one in three are estimated to have more than 10 jobs through their lifetime. So people are paying into these occupational schemes, but moving jobs more frequently are the two kind of big themes. So I think what this means is that the kind of gap for pensions is people having stranded pots whereby you may move jobs after 2-3 years. You've built up kind of probably a reasonable amount of money in that pot, then you go to your next job, and it's very hard to kind of understand what you've built up. And I think this means that people therefore don't really engage with it, don't understand it, and don't start really planning for their future. They've got lots of small amounts of money scattered around. So what we're hoping to do with our pension launch is to make the process of bringing all that together very easy into a relatively low cost option. And I think what's important there is not only the kind of the low cost side, but also that you can then see how you're doing and what your retirement looks like. And I think as soon as you bring this into, you know, someone's life and they go, actually, this is a reasonable chunk of money I've accumulated, you know, say if you're 30, 35, that might be quite a meaningful sum of money you've accumulated through your working life. Being able to actually see that on your phone, see how that's growing, and then if you choose to contribute more, you can do that. But then also to help you understand what kind of retirement that might get you. I think, again, similar to the kind of roundups idea, I think once you start engaging with this, it goes from being something on the to-do list, a bit scary, or a lot of kind of horror stories out there in the news, to actually, okay, I've got this pot of money I've built up. I can see a path from where I am now to having quite a comfortable retirement by making a few changes or by doing certain things I'm not doing today. And so for us, I think that's the kind of real challenge in pensions, is to bring everything together so people can start to engage, understand kind of how well they're doing, and then if they want to contribute more, to do so. And so for us, that's kind of the big focus at the moment, is to launch that for the next few months.
I wanted to ask you both now about, I guess, how it's been setting up the business. I mean, Ben, you've founded businesses before. How has Moneybox been different? And I guess, yeah, Charlie, you chip in as well.
One way in which Moneybox has been different is that we operate in a regulated environment where we deal with people's money. So there was less a concept of, let's say, minimum viable product here. It had to be much bigger at the beginning. So that meant bigger in terms of required team and bigger in terms of the amount of money it required. Other than that, I think it's been fairly similar. I think the challenges are the same. Understanding the market, understanding what customers want, finding the right people and corralling them to do the right thing. It's been an exciting journey so far. It's also a huge industry that we're operating in. So in our first 3 years, you know, we've got 120,000 customers and made some good progress. But really what needs to exist here is a company that addresses probably 10 million people in the UK and that gives them a place to go to confidently plan for their financial future. And that's what we're trying to build.
That was Ben Stanway and Charlie Mortimer, the co-founders of Moneybox. And that's all we have time for on today's show. Thank you very much to Ben Stanway and Charlie Mortimer from Moneybox, to Emily Bellet from Vestpod, and to Max Rafaga from Finimize. This show is produced by Daniel Bache and mixed and edited by Kieran Matthew Banerjee. I'm Matt Alagaya, and I'm afraid this will be my very last episode as the host of The Entrepreneurs. It's been an absolute pleasure, but please do continue tuning in, as I'll be leaving the show in the fantastically capable hands of its producer, Daniel Bache. He'll be in the chair next week. If you'd like to get in touch about the show or with ideas, please do drop him a line at db@monocle.com. Thank you all for listening. Goodbye.